I'm not familiar with what Mr. Rubin's activities now.
Let me just ask then a general question. Is there anything ethically or morally wrong from a former high executive in any administration from going into business using their former contacts to help their business proliferate?
Well, I think there are ethical questions about it, not speaking about the case which I'm dealing with in particular, but in general, a lot of states I know have laws that restrict former officials from going into business right away with people that they've done business with while in the government. They'll have a 6-month or a 1 year or a longer waiting period, because obviously somebody who has just left office may be in a position to exercise undue influence on a contract being awarded or on some other piece of public business that affects private enterprise. So obviously, in a general way, that there's long been an issue of the revolving door and the ethical questions that it raises.
If you've just joined us, Daniel Golden wrote an article on the September 27th, page 3 of the Wall Street Journal, about the bin Laden family and its connection to the Carlyle Group, and that connection to Jim Baker and Frank Carlucci and former President Bush. He is in Boston this morning. We said earlier that he's sitting in front of a photograph. He's actually sitting in front of what I guess would be a rear projection camera with, because those boats behind you are moving, so I suspect that's a videotape. Is that a picture out of a window?
I haven't actually looked behind me. When I look in front of me, I see a window, but it's got drapes on it, so I'm not sure. I know there's a view of Boston out there, but it's not very clear to me.
Mr. Golden is resides in Belmont, Massachusetts. Do I remember correctly that's where the John Birch Society is located, or was?
I think it was located there. My understanding is it isn't anymore, which I'm glad about.
San Francisco, California, next for Daniel Golden.
Good morning, Mr. Golden. I listen to you, and I find myself thinking that you sound like the proverbial politician who calls his opponent a thespian and expects it to have some impact. And I wonder, what is it about the fact that there's a business relationship between the Carlyle Group and the Bin Laden family, which is a large industrial family in Saudi Arabia, which you pointed out in your article? Why should that cause anybody any concern whatsoever? Why is that an issue, given the fact that Osama is estranged from that family?
Well, as I believe I said before, he's estranged from the principal members of the family, but, intelligence experts believe that he's still in contact with some members of the family. As I said, there's a dispute over his financial stake in the business, which he has some relationship to, although the money's frozen. He has a brother-in-law who's been identified as a terrorist. So these are all reasons why, at least I think, it's worth a newspaper article to look at the relationship between the Bin Laden family and the Carlyle Group and American business.
Any follow-up caller?
Yeah, I mean, again, I've had some familiarity with Carlyle Group investments over the years. I know they were in America's Favorite Chicken, one example. I understand that the connection between the family and Osama may be a little murky and is not a simple black and white estrangement. But again, my impression is that you are making an implication about the Bin Laden family as a business organization and the Carlyle Group, which is a more nefarious implication that is probably warranted.
Thanks. Mr. Golden.
Yeah, I should add one other thing, which is that according to the biographies I've read of Mr. Bin Laden, Osama, he used his family's sort of business network. It helped him, get financial and other kinds of resources to make contacts. I mean, it's a network that he used as he was building up to, the kind of notorious position he has today. So that's another reason why it bears scrutiny. And as for the Carlyle Group, I think that, it's interesting that this is one place that they accepted money from. And, I think that if they didn't feel a bit queasy about it, they probably would have been willing to be quoted in the paper and probably would have come on this show.
Stuttgart, Germany, next for Dan Golden. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Thank God for C-SPAN. I watch every chance I get. It's late afternoon here in Germany. I transplanted over here because of the smoke and mirrors. Does Mr. Golden happen to know why the government is lying to us? Anthrax is being a vaccine being made in Lansing, Michigan. They don't have the contract to make it for civilians because they've had trouble with the Food and Drug Administration. Also, there is so much smoke and mirrors going on about other things. They don't want panic. They don't want to know, let you know about the rotary engine, fuel cells, or any of those things. And a carburetor gets much greater mileage. They don't tell you how gasohol can be used out of corn and would help the farmers. There are so many things that that the government does. Good does evil, evil does good. And the key word is logic, and the key word that, they don't want to happen in America is panic.
Dan Golden.
Well, yeah, I'm not really an anthrax expert. I can't help him there.
Go back to your article, because the implication is made that the Carlyle Group continued to do business with the Bin Laden family even after the 1993 World Trade Center bombing at that time. Did you ask anybody about why they continued after that? Because it's in the article.
Well, yeah, I think that the relationship from the Carlyle Group's accounts started in 1994 or so. I think that, you know, as I've said, they felt assured, or so they say, that there wasn't a connection between the family, the rest of the family, and Osama. And they were looking for more contacts in Saudi Arabia. And as I say, the Bin Laden family is very close to the royal family. It's close to other wealthy families in Saudi Arabia. And the Carlyle Group, I think, was looking to cultivate investors in that region, which is, of course, a very well-off, it's got some very well-off, you know, prosperous millionaires and billionaires with money to invest.
Palmdale, California, for Dan Golden. You're next.
Hi. I'd like to thank Mr. Golden for having the courage to shed the light on this family. I'm really tired of the hypocrisy and the stupidity of the right wing and how they are just into the big money and into the oil. To the lady from Tampa, Florida, wake up. Get your head out of the sand. The Bush family and corruptness go hand in hand. We have the Iran-Contra scandal, the stolen election, even now with the former resident at the White House. If you want to protest him, you have to be behind a First Amendment zone tape. You can't even, you know, express your disgust or your anything with him, because you have to stand behind a certain area. I just really thank Mr. Golden for having the courage to shed the light. I mean, it's wonderful. And to the man from San Francisco, if this were Clinton instead of Bush, the Bush family, we would be spending billions of dollars investigating him. I'm really tired of the hypocrisy.
Mr. Golden, any retribution whatsoever from the Bush administration when this article came out?
No, as I said, it was largely ignored there for the first week or two, and only now is it getting this kind of groundswell.
And is there any fear, though, in a Wall Street Journal that an article like this would lead to this administration during a wartime to exclude you from some of the pools and things that happen at the Defense Department?
Well, I haven't heard anything like that. And, you know, on my part, you know, I'm not based in Washington. I'm based in Boston. I don't cover the administration on a regular basis, so it wouldn't affect me personally. And I haven't heard from anybody in the Washington Bureau any indication that this article was taken adversely. I think, you know, it was seen as a very balanced account, as was my prior article on the Bin Laden Group and its connections with American business. I mean, I think it was seen as newsworthy. And, you know, we've emphasized that the Bin Laden family group, as I said, aided the U.S. military in crucial times. And you know, has disowned Osama. So I think they were grateful for the even-handed approach.
Dan Golden has been at the Wall Street Journal for 2 years. We go next to Pearl River, New York. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering why the press doesn't seem to go after the other side of the story, into the terrorist and the investigation of them. They seem to be on any superhighways of information that the government has created. They follow up and go into every nook and cranny, but they don't seem to create their own sources to bring new information in.
What are you talking about, caller? Give us some idea. What do you want them to do?
Well, who are all these terrorists? Are they over there investigating them? Are they looking into that?
Well, there have been reams of copy in the newspapers here on the East Coast about these terrorists and who they are.
Only
and where
the ones that were identified by the FBI and talked about as a total picture of what government information there is. There is no investigative reporting done that's bringing new stuff in or following them down and following all the leads on them as actively as they are, you know, what missile was shot and what was the name on it.
I would comment that, I mean, there has been obviously pages and pages and pages and pages written about the hijackers and whatever we can find out about their associates. But I'd add, you know, in fairness to the caller's point, it is an extraordinarily difficult story to cover. Partly because the investigation, understandably, is being played very close to the vest. So it's very hard to find out, for example, the names of the people who have been detained in the investigation and which ones are considered, you know, to have terrorist connections and which ones are just being detained because of immigration violations. And, you know, even if you know the names, it's very hard to know exactly on what basis what facts are held. There's not been a lot of information given out in the courts. So a lot of our normal sources of information are dried up. There's not a lot of public documents. There's not a lot of, you know, lawyers willing to talk. And so reporters, are, as a result, are forced to rely heavily on law enforcement sources. And there's a couple problems with that. Obviously, law enforcement sources are just as biased as any other source. What they find out, they also have incomplete information. What they find out one day may not prove to be true the next day. And it just makes it very difficult when, you know, all the trails simply lead back to, you know, whatever FBI or ATF or customs person you may be able to persuade to give you a few dribs and drabs.
In your September 27th article, here's what you say. You say a U.S. inquiry into bin Laden family business dealings could brush against some big names associated with the U.S. government. Former President Bush said through his chief of staff, Gene Baker, that he recalled only one meeting with the bin Laden family, which took place in November 1998. Ms. Becker confirmed that there was a second meeting in January 2000 after being read the ex-president's subsequent thank you note. President Bush does not have a relationship with the bin Laden family, says Ms. Becker. He's met them twice. Again, I go back to these thank you notes that were so famous when he was president. You actually saw the thank you note, or you just were read the words?
Well, I don't want to get into exactly the specifics of the source material I dealt with. But, you know, obviously that was not a, you know, that was absolutely correct, the text as you read it.
What advantage is it to the bin Laden family that this kind of an article be printed?
Well, I'm not sure it's to their advantage or disadvantage. You know, I mean, to their advantage would be the parts of the story where we point out that they've disowned Osama and they've been helpful to the U.S. To their disadvantage might be that some of their business partners in the United States might be embarrassed and run for cover and not be eager to do business with them anymore. But You know, that's not a consideration I have in mind. I'm just, you know.
You also say in your article, Mr. Baker, meaning Jim Baker, visited the bin Laden family in both 98 and 99, according to people close to the family. In the second trip, he traveled on a family plane. Mr. Baker declined comment, as did Mr. Carlucci, a past chairman of Nortel Networks Corp., which has partnered with Saudi bin Laden Group on telecommunications ventures. Again, it appears when you read the article that the bin Ladens wanted you and us to know that they were all close to this Carlyle Group.
No, I don't think so. They did not initiate the story, and I don't think, you know, my sense is that the bin Laden family is not exactly eager for publicity right now.
Scottsdale, Arizona, for Dan Golden of the Wall Street Journal. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
What I wanted to say was that it sounds like from your previous guest, Chris Matthews, and this guest, that you're insinuating that this war is being fought in Afghanistan over oil. And from the last time I checked, it was about 6,000 dead Americans. So it just seems like there's liberals calling in with these conspiracy theories about the Bushes and the Gulf War and whatnot. And I don't think you can say that this war is being fought over oil.
Don't go away. I'll let Mr. Golden react, and then you can come back at him. Go ahead.
Yeah, I actually want to continue a point I made before, because I'm certainly not trying to imply that it's being fought over oil, though that's obviously always been a big issue in the Mideast. When I said that the bin Laden family wasn't eager for publicity, I just wanted to elaborate on that. I mean, one can have some sympathy for the bin Laden family as opposed to Osama, in that they're kind of trapped between two worlds. They, you know, back in Saudi Arabia, they have to pass muster with the fundamentalists. I mean, they have contracts to renovate the mosques at Mecca and Medina and other holy places, and if they don't appear suitably fundamentalist and strict in the Islamic sense, they might lose those contracts. On the other hand, they have a lot of friends in the United States. Some of their children, the next generation, were born here and are citizens here. A lot of them have been educated at American, you know, prep schools and universities. And you know, so they want to be on both sides at a time when the world is rapidly polarizing. And this was symbolized for me. I was told that one member of the bin Laden family, when he's in the United States, he's clean-shaven, but when he goes back to Saudi Arabia, he grows a beard, because that's what good Muslims should do.
Let me ask the caller in Scottsdale, is this kind of a story fair game at this time?
Well, what I want to know is, does his story state all these things that he just told me, in fairness to, you know, to explain a little bit more about the bin Laden's relation, or who they are, and, you know, does his story go into those things?
It goes into some of them. Some of them there wasn't space for, and some of the other stuff I just mentioned I didn't know at the time I wrote it.
Well, there was a 60 Minutes piece, or one of those network pieces, where they talked to a doctor who was a close friend of the bin Laden, saying exactly the same thing that you did, that when they get on an airplane and come over here, they take off their garb and they shave clean and all that. I mean, is this cynical or what?
Well, I think you could see it as cynical, but you could also see it as kind of sad.
Why?
Well, because as I was saying, they've got these two different worlds that they're in between, and obviously it's not, you know, it's not a tragedy or anything, but I think it's difficult for people who've built up a huge business in Saudi Arabia based on sort of good relations with the rest of the world to see it kind of crumbling in both places.
Montreal, Canada, for Dan Golden, you're next.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, sir. Thanks for joining us. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I work for a law firm in Montreal, and we handle many, many commercial contracts in Nova Scotia. And one which we worked on was the New York Times, which owns considerable property in Nova Scotia, including their pulp mills and ships and you name it, all above board. But the New York Times in Nova Scotia also has joint ventures with the Carlyle Group, and all again above board.
Sir, can I ask you a question?
Certainly.
As a lawyer, how are you able to even discuss this?
Well, I can discuss it because you don't know who I am, and I thought I could add something to the conversation.
Oh, don't mind you calling. I just wondered from a standpoint of being in the law.
As long as I don't go into the details, I have no problem with it.
So what are you saying? What's the point of your
My point is that your show seems to be saying there's something nefarious about Carlyle and former President Bush having had contacts in the past with this Mideast group. And so far, I would sum the article up as, so what? Now, the Salzburg owned the New York Times, have contacts with that same group, and they have contacts with groups in Israel.
Thanks. Is your story nefarious?
No, I don't think it's. I don't think it's either nefarious or a disgrace to journalism. You know, as a previous caller put it, I don't think it's the most important investigative story ever written. But I think it adds a little to the context for people trying to understand what the world's like today, which is pretty much what I was trying to do.
Have you tried to get the Carlyle Group on the record after your story came out again?
No, I haven't, because, as I mentioned before, I'm exploring some leads, but until they go a little farther, I don't have enough to ask the Carlyle Group about to make it worthwhile.
And our producer has told me that they did not call us back last night, so that we're still waiting for a call. I'd love to have them come on and explain the whole company, the whole outfit. Frank Carlucci or Jim Baker, any of them would be welcome here to talk about it. Let's go to Columbia, Missouri. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I believe this whole issue is about guilt by association. I agree with the earlier caller who said that you're trying to smear the reputation of legitimate businesses and officials who dealt with the bin Laden family. The bin Laden family cannot have any control on Osama bin Laden. The guy is an adult. He can do anything he wants, and if he dealt with the connections that his family had with and other legitimate businesses, and it's not their fault, and it would be the fault of the businesses who directly dealt with Osama bin Laden, and that's it.
Caller, where is the smear here?
Well, number one, he has absolutely no reason to say that, you know, I mean, to me, in my opinion, what he's saying is, well, you know, and he's dealing with the bin Laden family, you know, because they are relatives of that terrorist, they're also terrorists, because otherwise this would not have any reason to be written about.
Let me ask the caller one question. Do you think that we at the Wall Street Journal simply should not have printed this story, that it wasn't sufficiently newsworthy to put in the paper that former President Bush, former Secretary of State Baker, and former Secretary of Defense Carlucci had visited the bin Laden family headquarters within the last couple of years and were in had a financial relationship with them? Do you think that that's not even worthy of going in an American publication?
The reason why I say yes, I think that there is no reason to write about it, because they are a legitimate business, aren't they? Did they deal with any terrorists? Are they terrorists? If Osama bin Laden dealt with the Carluccis and the Bush himself, yes, I will agree with you totally, and this is newsworthy. But the fact that, example, I'll put myself in their situation. If one of my relatives was a criminal, I have no fault to it. Okay? And my reputation, myself, should not be punished for it. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's...
This is an adult. He's not a child. It's not like they are they're able to control him or they're able to do anything about it. As a matter of fact, as you said, they have cut him off. Therefore, it's not newsworthy. What you are trying to say, in my opinion, and the way I conclude from what you have done, is not because this is newsworthy. It's because you're trying to say to any type of legitimate businesses, do not deal with the Arabs, do not deal with that part of the world, because otherwise we're going to smear your reputation. That's what you're trying to say, because I really cannot find any reason why they cannot deal with the bin Laden family.
Thanks. Mr. Golden.
Yeah, as I said before, the relationship between the family members and Osama is a little bit murky. The family's formally disowned him. The brothers who run the family have no contact with him. There were reports that he called his mother or stepmother, I wasn't clear which, a couple days before September 11th to let her know that something big was going to happen. He does have a brother-in-law, sister's husband, who's been identified as a terrorist by Philippine law enforcement authorities. He did have a financial stake in the company, and it's unclear what has happened to that. I think there's enough reason to at least raise the question about the family.
Mr. Gohan, let me go to the person's point, though, and see if you what your comment would be on that. Isn't it safe to assume that a lot of American public policy officials and administration participants are doing business today with the Israelis?
I'm just not familiar enough with that to say, but it sounds reasonable to me.
Let's go next to Nassau in the Bahamas for Dan Golden. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I do agree with the last caller that I know that sometimes it looks like he is trying to vilify Bush simply because Bush or whatever has some connections with the bin Laden family. And you cannot, for instance, me, I know many families, the members of the families are fantastic, but there's one bad apple. Okay, all of a sudden I'm a bad guy. I say give the guy a break. Stop vilifying. And in my personal opinion, I believe the author has a personal agenda. There's more behind his reporting of this just to simply report it. He says, oh, don't you think it's worth reporting, yada, yada. I say to him this. Sometimes when you report, it's not just for the sake of reporting, but the personal agenda of the reporter has to be taken, just like a filmmaker has a point of view. You cannot do a completely disassociate yourself from the kind of film you are making or the kind of piece you are reporting. You always have a personal agenda. What is the reason? Just to report? No. I say there are reasons behind persons reporting what they're reporting. What is the author's actual agenda against this Bush man?
Thanks.
I can just tell you that, you know, I have no personal agenda other than, you know, trying to follow my nose toward a good story. And I would differentiate between a film, which I would agree is a very personal statement, and a news story, which I don't think is such a personal statement.
Are you surprised at the number of calls that have come in this morning that think this is not a story?
Yeah, I mean, I think I perceive a certain defensiveness, as if, you know, somehow the story were unpatriotic. You know, and all I can say is those aren't the kind of considerations that motivate me when I research a story. And on this particular story, you know, I had two co-authors, an editor in Boston, editors in New York. I mean, it was a group decision to report and run this story. And
what was their reaction to this?
You know, I mean, they liked the story, or they wouldn't have put it in the paper. You know, it was not heavily rewritten or edited or anything. There was not this kind of discussion. I mean, I think everybody felt that it was sufficiently newsworthy. Now, they didn't put it on page one. They put it on page three, which I think was a reflection that they didn't want to make too much of it. But obviously, page three is a good placement, and they felt it was worth the attention of the American public.
Sylmar, California, for Dan Golden. Just a couple minutes left. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. I think I can give you a few places to look for a little more information, Mr. Golden. I'm not sure if you've read the book False Prophets, which was about the BCCI scandal. Okay, this went on in the 80s and the 70s, came to light in the late 80s when George Bush Sr. was the president. There's a lot of information that intertwines with your story in that book, okay? I've read the book several times. In fact, I just read it 2 days ago.
What's the fella's name?
Pardon me?
What is the fella's name?
The book?
No, the book, yeah.
Oh, you know, I can. It's probably in the other room, in my bedroom.
Well, but there was a book written like this that was discredited, and the man I don't believe is alive anymore.
No, this is a book that's written by two fellas. It hasn't been discredited.
While Mr. Golden is answering this, you ought to go get the book so that we don't just leave the information there without the source.
Look, Brian, I have it, and I'm going to tell you another book to look for, and believe me, you're on the right track, sir. Hold on, I'm going to get the book.
Go ahead, Mr. Golden.
Well, there's, I have a passing familiarity with the BCCI scandal, but I'm no expert on it, but there have been a number of books written on it, and there's no question that one of the leading figures in that was named Mahfouz. He was another wealthy Saudi Arabian, a banker, and I think he's friends with and has many ties with the Bin Ladens.
Is there a caller back?
Oh, I'm back.
Yeah, what's the book?
Okay, the book is False Prophets. It's written by Peter Truell and Larry Gerwin.
Okay. Peter Truell is a Wall Street Journal reporter.
There you have it. Okay, yeah. So you can talk to him personally. Now, what you said is right about Mahfouz. There's a lot of other people involved in that, too. George W. is involved in it. Jeb is involved in it. George Sr. is involved in it. They're all hooked up. Carlucci was involved in a BCCI thing. Clark Clifford. Many, many high, big wig political figures are involved with the BCCI scandal. Orrin Hatch. But I don't want to go into that. You're on the right track. There's another book that you can look at called Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. And that was written by, I forget who it was ghostwritten by, but the guy who was the memoirs of was a guy named Terry Reed. You might want to look at that book.
All right, sir, thanks.
I think there's another book also about BCCI calling something like Bank of Crooks and Criminals, something like that. And, there's no question that that's a whole, you know, ripe, complicated area involving, as players, various Saudi Arabian billionaires and the Bush family in some degree. But you really need a scorecard to understand the BCCI, but it definitely relates in some way.
We have one more call for you, and we'll wrap it up. Cleveland, Ohio, you're on the air.
I was going to ask Mr. Goldman if he thought it was worth looking into what oil companies are prospering from this war and what defense contractors are prospering from it.
Thanks.
Well, that kind of thing I think is always worth looking into, but I don't know yet what it would turn up.
Thank you, Dan Golden. And once again, it's on the, it's a September 27th article in the Wall Street Journal. You say it's available on the website. If people don't subscribe to that or can't get into it, is there any other way to get it?
That's a good question. I mean, they could email me a request for a copy, I guess, at dan.golden@wsj.com, and I'll try and accommodate them.
dan.golden@wsj.com.
Right.
And we appreciate you coming on the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dan Golden in Boston this morning. As we said earlier, he is from Amherst, Massachusetts, was at the Boston Globe for some 18 years and has been at the Wall Street Journal for the last 2 years and wrote that piece with two others on September the 27th. Tomorrow morning on the Washington Journal.
Stunning. Stunning intel. All hiding in plain sight, so to speak. And nobody cares about it right now. It's radio silence. And if this escaped you with all that intel and information, understand that the Bin Laden family had money and political connections through the Carlyle Group, who basically served as their financial advisors and political advisors in the United States on many issues. To handle the Bin Ladens, the Carlyle Group turned to former Secretary of State James Baker and former President George Poppy Bush. And Bush met with the family multiple times, as you heard. And while Bush was working with the Bin Ladens, getting them out of the country, his son was the president. Think he'd have any problem getting them out of the country? Got them out of the country days later. I think, because I was working 9/11 at the time, we were in Florida. I think the time frame, there was still a flight restrictions. There were flight restrictions because we had a drive to Florida 2 or 3 or 4 days after. I think it was 2 days after, but we were driving all over the place. We still couldn't get a flight. And when we were done in Palm Beach and other places in Florida, we had to drive back. We said, let's put the fucking car on a train or something. I want to fly back. We still couldn't fly back. Well, in that interim, in that period, a week, 7, 8 days, I don't know how long the flight, I guess I could look it up. It's not really germane. Anyhow, they used the private connections to get these guys out of the country. Poppy Bush, he didn't have any problem getting a plane out of the country.